Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
You know, I think the more success I got in my life, people go, I can't believe you're still here. You still do this every day. I'm like, well, what else would I do?
Recognize that distinctive gravelly voice? That's Chris Bianco, the man I call the Pizza Poet Laureate, the only pizzaiolo ever to win the James Beard Award for Best Chef in 2003 for Best Chef Southwest, and the author of the extraordinary cookbook, Bianco, Pizza, Pasta, and Other Food I Like.
I thought of that myself, Ed. You
So you win the James Beard Award.
Yeah.
Were you, you know, I have a feeling you were simultaneously proud and uncomfortable.
You would be exactly correct. You'd be exactly correct. Only because, you know, I mean, back in the day, as old people like me like to say, is, you know, I'm not ashamed that I remember, you know, I think 95, Michelle Scicchiloni wrote a book, and she was very nice to us, very complimentary about our pizza. And
lives in Brooklyn still.
Yeah, she, at that time, I think called her a favorite in the United States at that time. And they brought some scorn or whatever, you know, to what are you talking about thing. And then we got a, you know, I think a 29 in Zagat that year for food or something. I never even heard of Zagat.
Right.
Somebody said that. I was like, I thought it was a candy bar. I had no idea. and then when I first got nominated for the Beard Award, I thought it was pretty cool, but I had no idea about really what the ramifications were. Like, I never cooked. Before, even when I won, before that, I never cooked at the Beard House. I never did anything. I couldn't leave the restaurant.
Yeah.
And then after I did one a few years later, I got to go to the Beard House and cook. It was a great thrill for me. And I'm incredibly, you know, grateful for any recognition that comes from your peers. I think that was the one, after I was uncomfortable with it because I never believe in the best of anything.
Right.
But again, I said this more than once in my life, but I never believed that was the party, but I wanted to be invited to the party.
Right. Sure.
Like, you know, so I think it was incredibly humbling to just know that, like, you know, Daniel Ballou knew who I was, or all these people that I respected so much, Mario, who's been so kind to me, Vitaly's been just a great, I mean, so generous in his everything to me, and has so many people in this industry been extremely kind to me, and I think that's the part of it. When people say that fucking dude is lucky, you're right. I've been incredibly lucky. And the timing has been incredibly lucky.
Yes, and you made your own luck, too.
You know, but I think it is a combination. For me to not understand that somewhere tolling in whatever, something that's at worst equally as relevant as mine, I get that. Like, I get that I'm just the guy that went to work, and I've been fortunate. I worked hard, and I am just like you.
Yeah.
And I know, even with whatever I achieved in my life, that I also understand its fragility. I understand that, I know Marv Albert got through that little thing in his life that was a bump in his road, but...
Sure.
But sometimes...
It happens.
But it happens. I mean, so I try to do things, at least in a food sense, that as much as I can, that don't compromise what you think of my work. So I'm constantly trying to not let you down and not let myself down. But about the beer thing, it was very... you know, humbling. I was very grateful, but it was also a sense of, it was probably the first time when people came to check me out instead of eating, which kind of broke my heart.
Yes.
You know?
You know, like, because you became the nation's, which you never wanted to be, you became the nation's pizza oracle.
Yeah.
And I don't think you were ever comfortable with that.
Nah, I'm still not comfortable with it because I think it always took a village. I think I was happy to be a part of that. You know, and I was in Phoenix. I wasn't like I was easy to find, essentially. It was like, but there was elements why, when I look back at it, too, is like, I think there was something, and still is something, about my theory of everything matters.
Yeah.
And the space itself that I was in is magical.
You know, yes.
Our downtown location, it's a 1927 brick building. Of growing up in a city of storefronts.
Right.
You can never walk around in totality or see through the side windows.
It's a pre-war building in downtown Phoenix.
Yeah, and I think it was really cool because not only was it freestanding, but it reminded me of, you know, like the levitating woman trick, you know, where they put the hoop. It reminded me of that. Like, that building was this levitating
That's great.
Person that you could, you saw there was no strings attached to it.
Yeah.
Like, there was a chimney where the smoke came out. If you want to look through the trash, see what we use, go ahead. You know, and
it was a cloud that was billowing smoke.
Yeah, and it was called Pizzeria Bianco because all the other cool names I had explained too hard, and that was the best I could think of was pizzeria, and I was an idiot making it, so it made some sense. So, you know, when people came, said, oh, I love your concept, I was confused. You know, I didn't really understand it was a concept. It was still, I think even that time, something I just did.
Yes, and you didn't think, it's funny you mentioned concept because then I remember you told me Richard Melman from Let Us Entertain You wanted to build a replicatable concept, and you thought about it, and then you didn't do it.
I mean, you know, if I was going to do a replicatable concept and 10 of them, Rich would be a great guy. I love him.
Right.
And he's a brilliant guy. But I also knew, you know, timing is everything, and especially in the throes of where I was, the timing wasn't right. I think to eat a cheese before it's mature enough, or a wine, this, you know,
or a concept.
Yeah. I mean, I think, hey, I'm not anti those things. I was anti those things in the place
at
I was in
moment.
At that moment.
Yep.
You know, with not having a clear intention, and it was kind of like why even the book. I mean, Dan Halperin came to see me actually with Deborah Madison 12, 15, 14 years ago to ask me to do the book. And I was like, what am I going to say? We need another book.
Mean the book's dough has been rising for 14
years? Well, I said I'd get back to you. It's been 5 years since I said I'd do it. But the book, I just said at that time, I said no. And then when I decided to do it and we talked to some people, and I'm a loyalist in a way of he was the first one to ask me about,
right?
You know, doing this book, and so it was a really interesting experience.
And then you opened a couple of restaurants in London with
Jamie
Oliver.
That was an incredible experience for me. I'm actually going back in a couple of weeks. You talk about perspective, and you look at any, I think, leader in history, or maybe people in history, and most of them had to leave wherever they were, even Jesus, to find perspective. You know, to kind of leave.
So
stay
you,
where you
needed
are.
To go to
I
need, London.
I needed to go even where I was. Even though I left New York, I went to Phoenix. I think at that time in my life where I had a little health issue that I was dealing with, I needed to find a place that I could serve anything at its greatest and highest good. What did I have? Like, I was facing something where all I could really offer previous to that was my physicality. To the
right,
craft.
And we should I don't want to dwell on the health issue, but it was, you know, you've
yeah,
been...
Yeah, I mean, it's been a lot, you know, kind of made out of it, like, you know, where you know, people expecting, like, you know, life support
but you,
thing,
it,
but...
It was a serious
I got, yeah,
health
it was a very
issue.
Serious... I mean, I've had asthma since I was a kid, since I was five, and it's been, something I've had a relationship, speaking of that, and I would say the relationship was positive for the most part. It was incredibly... I think it kept me very grounded and gave me a sense of mortality.
But then you...
And something was bigger than me, but it got so much bigger than me that, you know, after years of breathing, inhaling flour, that it gave me like a baker's lung kind of...
And a
like,
doctor gave you a serious talking
he
to.
He gave me a talk. He said, hey, man, you know, it's, you know, I think you might want to redirect your
day, energies.
Your energies. If you want to hang around.
And must have been weird for you. If you want to hang around is, you know, is
well,
a very
yeah.
casual
well,
way
I think,
of
I think
saying,
it's just
but
yeah.
it was serious.
Yeah, I think it's serious in the way of whatever. I mean, but the point being that I think we all have challenges in our life, you know, whether they're physical or non-physical, that compromise our well-being. In this place, like, it was, I guess I would equate it to, not that I was an athlete of any kind, but maybe it's a struggle that, you know, how does, you know, a baseball player that threw pretty hard and struck guys out, all of a sudden, you don't throw as hard.
He can throw 88.
You know?
Yeah.
You don't throw as hard. And you know what? Your eyes are getting a little bit, where, you know, like an eagle eye, a little blurry around the edges. You know, you don't see the signs as easily. So what happens, I think, also in our society, to jump forward, that one of the things when I went to Europe, I was fascinated. I was so respected that how the elders of communities were treated. You know, grandparents lived in homes,
right.
And people ate at the table, and you watched them die. You know, you feed them to their last breath. they weren't shipped out. It was non-homogenous. You know, it was right. All the things I talked about our last time, which was, you know, we weren't shut away from life and death.
Right.
But when I was dealing with it, I looked at, you know, mortality, and you know, all of a sudden I was in Italy, and you watch the guys in their 80s, and you know, in the park in Italy, feeding the pigeons, having a coffee, having discussions, but you know, dressed impeccably, with a sense of place and worth, and going home to their families, you know, playing with their grandkids.
Right, and so
you know, having this really arc of life and this connectivity that I thought was missing, maybe. In my life,
it's funny because you were looking for a balance in your life that you'd found, that you already found in your pizza.
Right. I already found that way, but my life didn't. I was able to give things a respect and whatever time you needed to be right, and whatever you needed to be right, but I wasn't capable to give it myself. I didn't have that tools. I think there was some type of, you know, maybe not from being a martyr, but I would rather just... You know, I think the more success I got in my life, the more I wanted to, you know, I mean, after being so many years, people go, I can't believe you're still here. You still do this every day. I'm like, well, what else would I do?
Right. Yeah.
You know, because it was the same thing as, like, remember last time we were talking about the candy store going away. I didn't want the candy store to go away.
Right. And you felt like that's what you had.
Yeah.
It was, as you say, it was... The physicality involved of being at the oven, making it.
Like, it didn't need me, but I needed it.
Yes.
You know, I mean,
but I remember watching you man the oven, and it was literally like a ballet dancer. It was like the conductor of an orchestra. You know, it was like to watch you do your thing night in and night out was amazing. So it must have been so painful to have to find meaning in other things.
Yeah, I think, you know, the good thing now is I still get to back. And I worked a double shift on Sunday when my guys were on vacation, and it was great fun for me, and I loved it so much to be at the oven. You know, I just can't do it 18 hours a day, 7 days a week anymore, 6 days a week. So I think that struggle of how can I serve you and identifying at some point in your life and then finding there'll be something that'll separate you at some point in your life. Like, I won't be able to do this physical interview, or you won't at some point of our journey here. So I think seeing there was a little bit of a health issue that I had to address.
Right.
And, you know, Jamie called me one day and she said, hey, man, you want to come to London and do this thing? We'll have some fun. We'll do some pizza thing. And I'm like, cool. Sounds good.
Right.
And I said I'd do it under one condition, that we could use – I didn't want to bring my tomatoes or flour. I wanted to use all English things because it was that. What I talked about, like, maybe I didn't talk about this in the book. I'm talking about it now, which is what I wanted to do was, instead of saying you can only do these great things with these great things, I'm saying you can do those great things with these other great things. Like, now there's Shipton Mill in England that's doing old varieties of wheat, Maris Widgeon and Paragon and old varieties, or working with Neil's Yard Dairy, and, like, blowing
it's
my mind.
It's a great cheese.
It's just amazing. Monger. Like, using, like, oh my God, like, you know, I love Montazio and I love these Italian profiles, but this Lincolnshire poacher blows my mind. And now you're going to the dairy and you see the grass they're eating. You're going down the West Country and, to Westcombe Cheddar. And he was making some, like, curds for us that I was making mozzarella from. And also we had an English fried of wheat.
But you realize that there would be other ways to derive satisfaction and pleasure from other ingredients.
Yeah, I think that was it. And it really became almost kind of a global perspective to how I always saw people. Like, regardless of where you're from, you know, there's a place on some pizza somewhere for you.
Yeah.
You know, I think. And if you open your mind and say pizza comes in all shapes and sizes.
Right. I remember you once told me, you know, like when we were talking about the book, he was like, I want to have a chapter on an English muffin pizzas made in a toaster oven.
That'd be good. That'd be the next book. We're going to do that one.
Today's sponsor is RX Bar, a company that makes protein bars out of real food. No added sugar, no artificial colors or flavors, no preservatives, and no fillers. They're also gluten, soy, and dairy-free. In all 11 delicious varieties, you'll find simple ingredients: egg whites for protein, dates to bind, and nuts for texture. They're perfect for breakfast on the go, a snack at the office, an energy boost during a hike, and everything in between. Right now, RX Bar is offering 25% off your first order to all Special Sauce listeners. For this special deal, simply visit rxbar.com/SeriousEats and enter the promo code SeriousEats at checkout.
Ed Levine here, chatting with my old running partner, the great Pizzaiolo and chef Chris Bianco. This issue of moving from the physical nature of making pizza to a more spiritual, a more emotional and psychological plane. You know, it's like, it seems like that a light must have gone on. We were like, you want to find a different place to add meaning to the community that you became a part of.
Like, I understood that great wine was made in the vineyard, in the field. You know, I always loved the image of the wines being decanted, that somewhere grapes are sleeping in the dark amongst the fog, and they're taking it all in all on, you know, birds are pissing on them, whatever's happening.
Right.
You know, life is going on. And somehow you're taking that from the earth, you're taking from the terroir, from the environment, the struggle, the years spent, or the vines. And somehow we're going to take that in. We're taking all that in, all that terroir, all that history, all that earth. And somehow my, I guess, own personal epiphany was I wanted to be able to say, okay, I was crushing grapes before at the oven, but all the things that made me, when the door opened at 5 o'clock, now I was able to spend more time, you know, instead of torquing bolts, because a mechanic, a Ferrari mechanic, I could design the Ferraris from the field up. Like, you know, we have a little tomato business that started because I wanted to make something in this country, you know, better than I found it. And one of those was, you know, my partner, Rob DiNapoli, was, you know, third generation Italian-American tomato canner grower, and he had a good product.
Right.
He asked me if I wanted to maybe do, you know, first he asked me if I'd buy his tomatoes. I said, Rob, you're a nice guy and I like you, but maybe the characteristics of his tomatoes that he was growing and how he was packing them wasn't to my
Right. So you thought, okay, maybe I can work with him.
Well, he said, yeah, but I said, maybe we can work together. Yeah. Or he asked me, well, maybe we can work together and grow something. From that point, we added another partner, Scott Parks, who's an organic farmer there since the early 80s.
And those canned tomatoes you guys make are awesome.
Well, I'll tell you about them. You know, they are really special. But sometimes people misunderstand, you know, they say, oh, they're better than San Marzano. I love San Marzano. I love Italy. And I love anything that's great.
Right.
Just like I love all those bottles of wine in your cellar or, you know, on the wine list. And I think when we think about Meridian or Yolo County, you know, California, where those Italians went because the oil was like, was a gift. And we know that tomatoes were discovered in South America and, you know, in Chiapas, Mexico. And, you know, it would make sense that this part of the world might be able to do a pretty good bottle of wine also, or a tomato.
Right.
So I thought if I could, you know, it's like the links in the chains were, and this is kind of any industry, I think, but in the tomato side, I found the farmers really ever talked to the chefs.
Right.
And the canners were a third party. An artisan product that it is to can something. So I found there was a real disconnect. They let things go.
And if you could integrate those three
and
things.
And I said, if we could work together. Now Scott Parks taught me so much about, you know, where does this flavor happen? And I was so caught on the seeds.
Right.
And for me, now I'm all about the dirt, you know, the earth.
Yeah.
You know, like where, you know, now passive farming or biodynamic farming, crop rotation, what grew here last year.
Right.
Rooting systems, how far can they find nutrition? Can they taste good and not just, can they be good and taste good?
Right.
So they can sure. have, if you took them to a lab, can they have all the nutritional aspects?
Yeah. So they were engaging different parts of you.
Right.
That whole process.
Right.
It was a move, was part of the move from the physical.
Right. I was able to affect the game.
Got
or
it.
Affect that.
In different ways.
From a different position.
Yep, yep.
And then I misunderstood, like my brother Marco, who still makes all our dough, who always made all our dough, still makes all our dough. So I was able to control that, give it to the mixer, the sound mixer.
Right. You were the producer. You
know?
Went from being the best guitar player in the world to being the producer of the record.
Yeah, well, yeah, some, but I, yeah, exactly. I think, but I think it was, and still is, fascinate me as Chad Roberts and I doing this project in L.A., and I'm super excited working with my old friend. We're delving into grain varietals, right. You know, in that same fervor.
Yeah, and you can bring the same passion and right. and curiosity.
Exactly. You know, we can look at the 1,100 varieties of wheat that they're growing up at WSU and say how,
right.
which one of these suckers is going to be good and why
yep.
are these other grains through commodities were the ones we were presented with in the first place.
Right, yeah.
Is yep. because they were the greatest yield, because somebody owned the rights to it, or what was the reason? And if we had these varietals and we could grow it in that part of the country,
right.
would they have been our...
Yeah, you know, it's all part of the... You once said to me that all we can do is put up smoke signals and hope somebody reads them.
Yeah.
That's all any of us can do. If the pizza guy is teaching you something, imagine what the smart people can do.
You're much more
of a poet than you think. So
life is pretty poetic for sure.
So
but
now
I think that's it. I think that's it. I mean, that was the thing about the thing about the building that I was in. Like, I knew it was a magical place.
Right.
It was a magical place when birds were living in it, pigeons were living in it.
Right.
There was no windows in it, and it was vacant for 25 years. It was magical.
Yeah.
And it is. And I think if I could bring good intention to things that you can trust yourself that are special, they were already special.
Right.
Then things I think can be at higher places. I think we can look at them with a sense of worth.
Sure. So now it's time for the special sauce, All You Can Answer Buffet, Chris. You're in big trouble.
I'm ready, man. Bring the pain. Bring the pain.
So who's at your last supper? No family allowed.
Jeez, no family allowed.
Could be musicians, artists, painters, poets, chefs. Could be anybody.
My last meal.
Yeah.
I think I'd want to eat alone.
That's so Chris.
You know, I think I want to eat by myself so I can not ruin the imperfection of the people that might let me down if I did have the opportunity with them. And I could render and revere every moment that I had time to spend with people I love and trust that I might see them on the other side.
That's great. I love that. You've decided to dine alone for your last supper.
I think so.
What are you eating?
Well, you know, eating... Well, that's the thing. Maybe I might have a liquid gas. I might just go with a good bottle of something. Actually, you know what? I'll take that back. I think I'll go with cheese and crackers.
Just cheese and crackers.
I think that seems like a good move.
Like a good cheese.
Like a good cheese. I think like a Stilton, like a really nice Stilton and a good bottle of something. And
you'd be good.
I'll just submit to the pleasures of those two things. And give thanks.
So what do you cook when there's not much in your house to work with when you get home?
Well, you know, my favorite thing probably to cook of all time, I make it for my daughter like almost every day or with her now, is scrambled eggs. I love mixed scrambled eggs.
Just perfect, softly scrambled eggs.
I love scrambled eggs. You know, it's a really, there's two ways to do it. I mean, there's a lot of ways to do it.
Right.
There was a friend of mine, his grandson's still a dear friend of mine, but there was an old guy named Jack Rothman that lived in back of us. And he was a Holocaust survivor, super tough guy. And one day he's like, you come here. I want to show you how to scrambled eggs. And he came and he chopped these little chives from his garden. He had a little garden. And I show you how to make these scrambled eggs. He got these eggs, and it must have took 2 hours in the slowest pan you ever heard. And he pushed them, and he pushed them, and he pushed them.
Pushing the pizzas around the oven.
Yeah, he was pushing them slow and slow and slow and put them out and just gave this little mince of this chives. And I sit there, and he's like, before I took a bite, I told you. And that was it. And I love that slow and slow mixture. But the other thing that I love, and the way I cook them the most, I love that way. But in pressure time, I usually like a screaming hot pan. You know, a nub of butter.
And then you do on and off the heat, or you just keep it on?
You know what? I get it in. I scramble hard. I get a too big of a pan so I can get it flat, give it a push so I can get some shards of the eggs and dump it. Leave it a little wet and happy
days.
Yeah.
So is there a food that people would be surprised that you eat that would be that would be construed as a guilty pleasure?
Is there a food that I eat?
Yeah.
Shit, they're all guilty pleasures. you know, they're all guilty pleasures.
Like not like Cheetos or any of that, or saltines, or.
Let's see. You know what? I'll tell you this. If I'm in a party, and there's like Ruffles, and pedestrian French onion dip, I'll throw down on it. Because I think it was one of my first memories of you're at a party.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll have some sense of guilt afterwards, but I would lie if I would not submit to that.
All right. It's just been declared Chris Bianco Day all over the world.
Come on, man.
Yeah. What is happening all over the place on that day?
On that day? Yep. Probably people are writing their mayors right now saying, ooh, okayed this. What would be happening on Chris Bianco Day? Let's see. What would be one of the part of the festivities would be to build, I think, a table that would circle the earth would start that day.
Wow. Would there be anything on the table?
I'm thinking on it. Yeah. I want to be not just profound. I want to be. I think people would drop on there what they could, and we'd have to pass it to the left, and then we'd see what we ended up with.
I love it.
So it'd be Chris Bianco's Pass It to the Left Day. And I think it would be all right.
All right. Thank you so much.
Oh, God
brother,
bless you,
man.
Ed. I am, you know, so humbled and grateful to be here and to be back home. I guess you can come back home again.
It's,
and I'm
it's awesome.
Thank you, brother.
Your special sauce is really special. If you like great food, seriously delicious food, food that will change your life as it changed mine, you must head straight for Phoenix and eat at one of the Pizzeria Biancos and have a sandwich at the Pana Bianco.
We got Trotto now. You
yeah, you got Trotto, which
yeah,
is
a little Trotteria.
Which is a little Trotteria, which is awesome. And if you can't make it to Phoenix, go right onto Amazon right now or into your local bookstore and buy yourself a copy of Bianco, Pizza, Pasta, and Other Food I Like. Thank you, my brother.
Thank you, bro. Cheers.
And we'll see you next time, Serious Eaters.